We're holding on Mem Dalet Amud Beis, 8 lines from the bottom, last word. We started talking yesterday about the mitzvah of Eglah Rufa. The Torah tells us you find a dead body outside the city, you don't know who killed him. Then you have first, they have to go first, the Zekenecha v'sheftecha, as we're going to discuss in the Gemara over here, your Zekenim and your Sheftim, have to go out and measure and find the closest city. Then the Zekenim, the Beis Din of that city, brings a calf. They decapitate it in a valley near there. And there are certain psukim that they say and that the Kohenim say to absolve them. They say to absolve themselves of responsibility. The Kohenim say, Kapil Amfa Yisrael, Hashem, forgive your Jewish people. And that's the kapara for it, unless they ever find the person who did it. And then they bring him to Beis Din and get him executed or punished as appropriate. So we started talking about that yesterday. So now, continuing, the Mishnah had said, Rabbi Yehuda Aimer Chamisha, so first you have to have members of the Beis Din HaGadol have to be the ones who go out and do the measuring to find the nearest city. So the Tanakhama of the Mishnah had said that you need 3, and Rabbi Yehuda says you need 5. So what's the reason for the opinions? So turn on Abanan, V'yotzu Zekeinecha B'Sheftecha. The Pasuk says, your Zekeinim and your Sheftim should go out. So then we learn Zekenecha Shnayim. The word Zekenecha implies 2 because it's a plural, and then Miut Rabim Shnayim, the minimum plural is 2. V'Sheftecha Shnayim, the word Sheftecha also implies 2. V'Ein based in Shokol, so that so far gives you 4, but you can't have a based in be an even number because then they could end up being deadlocked. Therefore, you add 1 more. Hare Kan Kamisha Divir Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda says that's where you get 5. Reb Shimon says, and Reb Shimon is the Tanakhama of our Mishnah, or at least agrees with him. He says, Zekenecha Shnayim, just the word Zekenecha by itself means 2. He ignores the word V'Sheftecha, as we're going to explain in a second, that he does something else with it. The Ein based in Shokol. So again, since you can't have an even number based in, Moistifin Alein Oidech, and you add 1 more, Harekan Shlosha, and therefore you're up to 3. But so according to him, you don't Darshan from V'Sheftecha another 2. Well, the question is, Reb Shimon Nami Hoksiv B'Sheftecha. Well, then what is Reb Shimon doing according to him? The fact is, it does say B'Sheftecha. What is he learning from that? The answer is, he says that means it can't just be any Sheftim. It has to be the most special ones among them, meaning the ones from the Sanhedrin Dola. V'Reb Yehuda. So what does Reb Yehuda answer to that? He says, Mizikne Zekenecha Nafka. He learns that from the fact that the Posit could have said Zikne. This Gemara is also in Sanhedrin, because it deals over there at the beginning of Sanhedrin with the number of Dayanim that you need for various things. In Halacha, one of them it mentions over there is Eglah Rufa, and so the Gemara has basically the same discussion over there. So the Ran explains over there that Rabbi Yehuda is saying could have said Ziknei Sheftecha instead of Zkenecha B'Sheftecha. So therefore he learns from the word Ziknei. Now that's also why he doesn't learn from the fact that it could have said Sheftei and instead it said Sheftecha, because it couldn't have, the Ran says. There's no way, grammatically, it couldn't say Ziknei Sheftei. It wouldn't mean anything because Shofte, Zikne, means the elders of. So there has to be something for it to be tied to. The Shofte also would be the same thing. So it could say Zikne Shoftecha, but it couldn't say Zikne Shofte. Anyway, so he says, therefore, you can learn from the word Zikne, and instead it says Zkenecha, that therefore, that you learn from that, that it has to be your special Zikane. And then, since you have the plural Zikne and the plural Shofte, gives you 4. Reb Shimon, what does Reb Shimon answer to that? He says, still no good. If the Torah had written Zikne and not Zekenecha, have Amina for the Zikne Ashuk, then you would think it could mean even Zekenim from the street. Now, we don't mean literally from the street, as in just any random old people. The word Zekenim in Chumash always means Chachamim. Almost always, but it means, in other words, they wouldn't necessarily have to be the most special ones from the Sanhedrin HaGadol, from the Lishkas HaGazis, says Reb Shimon. Therefore, Kasi Rachmana, Zekenecha, therefore, the Torah writes the word Zekenecha, but still, if it only says Zekenecha without Sheftecha, have Amina for the Sanhedrin Ktana, then you would think that it's enough, even if they're members of the small Sanhedrin of 23, where you had various Sanhedrins like that, besides that you had them all over Eretz Yisrael, you had a couple even in Yerushalayim itself, and even in the Beis Mikdash itself. So it has to be the most special out of all of them, namely the ones from the Lishkas HaGozis. So in other words, Reb Shimon is saying you need both, because otherwise you would have thought it could be members of any Beis Din of 3, and you would have thought it could be members of any Beis Din of 23. No, but there's only one national Sanhedrin of 71, and the words Zekeinecha v'Sheftecha make that clear, but you can't therefore say that the words Zekeinecha and Sheftecha say each one two Dayanim, such that you should have 4, and then add a 5th one. Well, Rabbi Yehuda, so the Gemara says, so what does Rabbi Yehuda say to all of that? He says, Gomar, you don't need the words Zekeinecha to show that it means the Sanhedrin Gdolah. Gomar Zikne Zikne mi Zikne Ha'edah. Instead, he can learn it by Xeira Shava on the word Zikne, from the fact that it says Zikne Ha'edah in connection with the Parhelim Dover Shal Tzibur. The Torah tells us in Parshas Vayikra that there are certain cases where the national Sanhedrin makes a mistake in Halacha, and most of the people end up following them. The details of it are in Masechta Hodias, which we'll get to in a couple of years, Be'ez Hashem. Anyway, so, and there it says that Zikne Ha'edah lean their hands, they do smicha on the animal before it's shechted, and malahalim yuchadin shaba'edah. So just like over there, it means the special ones, the ones from the national Sanhedrin, because they're the ones where they're the ones where their psak din on behalf of the whole Jewish people is what triggers the whole parhelim davar shel tzibur process. Afkan miyuchadin shaba'edah. So the same way here in that case, he's also learning for that it means miyuchadin shaba'edah. So therefore, you don't need the word v'sheftecha to teach us that. Therefore, you have the Sheftecha available to teach you another 2 Dayanim. Well, the Gemara asks, E Gomer. Well, if in fact he's learning that Zeta Shava, Ligmar Olakula Milsevahasam, then why does he need to learn anything from Zekeinecha or Sheftecha anyway? He should be able to learn everything from there, because in fact, when it comes to the Parhelim Davar Shel Tzibur, in that same Gemara in Sanhedrin, Rabbi Yehuda says, in fact, that he learns from the Psukim there in connection with the Parhelim Davar Shel Tzibur that 5 members of the Sanhedrin do the smicha on the animal. So therefore, so if he's learning a Gzeder Shavah from there, automatically he knows 5 for there, for here, for the measurement. So therefore, he doesn't need to darshan Zekeinecha and Sheftecha separately. Zekeinecha b'Sheftecha lamali. So then why does he need to say the word Zekeinecha b'Sheftecha altogether over here? It could just say Zikne, or however you would say, whatever you would put after Zikne to make it make grammatical sense. You'd learn the Gzeder Shava, and that's that. You know, 5. So no, rather we have to answer, Ella, no. In fact, Rabbi Yehuda is not learning it from the Gzeder Shava after all. Rather, Vav b'Sheftecha l'minyana. He says the fact that it says Zekeinecha b'Sheftecha, the Vav teaches us that it means that the word Sheftecha adds another 2. So the word Sheftecha itself, he's using to say that you need members of the Sanhedrin Dola like Reb Shimon. But the Vav, he's saying that it means in addition another 2. Reb Shimon, Vav like Mashmalei, whereas Reb Shimon doesn't hold that the Vav over here is meant to be marba anything. Now you have in other places where Reb Shimon, the Mephoshim point out, Tosfos HaRosh, among others, points out that there are other places where Reb Shimon himself does use a Vav to darshan things. What we mean, in this particular place, he doesn't find it to be compelling to say that the Vav is meant for a drasha. Because he says, so the Torah is just telling you, with the word b'sheftecha, that it means the most special among your shoftim. Okay, so therefore, so Reb Shimon says there's nothing extra to be learned, there's no extra people to be learned from the Vav. Sheftecha itself means the special shoftim. Rabbi Yehuda agrees with that point, that Sheftecha means the special shoftim of the Beis Din HaGadol, but he held the Vav would add another 2, and Rabbi Shimon disagrees with that. Okay. Now, the question is, Ela Me'ata, so if you're telling me that every time we have a plural in the Psukim, then we're using it to darshan more Dayanim, so Ela Me'ata, then by that logic, we should say also V'yotzu Shnayim, when the Pasuk continues, they should go out, maybe should imply it implies shnayim, maybe it implies another 2 edim, umodadu shnayim, and maybe the words and they measure should also include another 2. So Rabbi Yehuda hare kan tisha, Rabbi Shimon hare kan shiva. So then if you follow the same logic according to Rabbi Yehuda, you'd wind up saying that you need 9 dayanim, because you'd have 4 plurals in the pasuk, that gives you 8, and then you add 1 more, so it's not even. And according to Reb Shimon, using the same logic, we're fine. He doesn't darshan an extra 2 from b'sheftecha, but he'd say you have 2 for zekeinecha, 2 for v'yatzu, and 2 for umadadu would be 6, and then you'd add 1 more. And it's not so. So why not? Why are we not darshaning extra people from why are we not darshaning extra people from those words? Meaning, in other words, basically, the Aruch HaNer in Sanhedrin explains that since already we said the Zakenim have to measure, then obviously they have to go out. But it could have been Mefoshim talk about, in other words, that it could have said whichever city is closest, then the Zakenim of it bring the egg out of it. And obviously, if you don't know which city is the closest, then you're going to have to measure. So therefore, it didn't really need to say the words v'yotzu and umadadu at all. So shouldn't we assume that those are meant to teach us that there's more dayan? And the answer is no. Hahumi boile l'chedetanya. No, as a matter of fact, we need those to teach us what it says in a braisa, that there are rules. V'yotzu means hein v'lo shluchehen. The word v'yotzu means the dayanim of the beis din agadol themselves have to go out. They cannot send shluchim, even though usually we say shluche shaladim kamoisai, but this is one of those examples where it's not so. Because the pasuk specifically says v'yotzu and umadadu, and when it says they should measure, means we learn that there's a mitzvah to measure sha'afila nimtza ba'alil la'ir, even if you find the body very close to the city, and it's very obvious that this is the closest city. Nevertheless, hoyu moedidin, they still measured because shemitzvah lasik b'medida, because it's a mitzvah to be involved with the measuring. Even if the measuring on the face of it is unnecessary, nevertheless, it's still a mitzvah to measure, and therefore the pasuk is stressing that by the word umadadu. The idea behind it, we started talking about yesterday, various Rishonim explain, the Chinuch summarizes it, that you want that they're making a whole to-do about this. The national Sanhedrin, it said members of the national Sanhedrin are coming out and measuring and so on and so forth, and then everybody's going to get curious about what's going on. And first of all, everybody's going to be very concerned about the fact that such a terrible thing happened among Jews, that a person was killed. But then also people will start wondering about it and checking into it, and eventually they may figure out who the person himself who did it wrong may in fact go and admit it, or if not, then people may come and say Eidos in front of them, and that way we'll be able to find the Ritzeach and deal with him. So therefore there's the idea that there's a mitzvah to measure even where it's not necessary. And then there's a machlokas rishonim within that, a machlokas achronim rather, within that. Do they have to actually still measure in every direction to every other city, or do they just need to measure to the nearest city? Anyway. So we learn that from the words v'yotzu umadadu, therefore we don't have those words available to teach us extra dayanim. Rav Shamshin Afal Hirsch has a whole explanation of this whole thing. He says that the vort is that the individual Sanhedrins and the individual cities in Eretz Yisrael themselves are already shluchim of the national Sanhedrin. And they obviously fell down on the job in the fact that something like this happened in their area. Therefore, the national Sanhedrin themselves have to come out. They can't send shluchim. Because they have to demonstrate that, basically, they're in effect, it's a rebuke to the local based, and you didn't do your job, therefore we have to come and supervise you. And he goes on to explain various other details of the mitzvah in that vein. Anyway, the Gemara says, Masnissin deloik Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Now, apparently our Mishnah does not go like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, who says, again, we have the Tanakhama saying that you need three dayanim, and Rabbi Yehuda saying you need five. But on the other hand, neither of them are talking about anybody else other than the members of the Sanhedrin coming out. But Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says that we learn the word Zakenecha and Sheftecha differently. Zakenecha zu Sanhedrin. The word Zakenecha, he says, refers to the Sanhedrin. And we're going to talk about in a second how many members of the Sanhedrin. And Sheftecha is a melech v'kohen gadol. And he says the word Sheftecha is not meant to teach us just Zakenim from the national Sanhedrin, like we said, or that it means to add another two dayanim, but rather it means that the king and the kohen gadol also have to come and be involved with the measuring. And we see that they're called shoftim, melech tichtim, melech b'mishpat yamid oretz. The pasuk says the king upholds the world with justice, so we see that he's called a shofet. Kohen gadol, tichtim v'osel kohenim ha-levim, ve'el ha-shofet ha-shiyir v'gomer. The pasuk says that you come to the kohenim, the levim, and to the shofet, which will be at that time. So now it's talking about coming to the Sanhedrin for a psak halacha, but still the fact that it phrases it that way, ve'el ha-shofet, after the kohenim levim, implies that it's somebody who's in charge of the kohenim, namely the kohen gadol. So he says that those need to be there as well, whereas the Tanoim and our Mishnah didn't say any such thing. Well, Iboilahu. So now the question becomes, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, a melech b'kohen gadol hu depolig, is he arguing only about the fact that you need the king and the kohen gadol, Abba b'Sanhedrin, ikir of Yehuda, ikir of Shimon, svirlei, but as far as the number of members of the national Sanhedrin, he agrees with either of Yehuda that you only need five, or of Shimon, you only need three. Aduma b'Sanhedrin, nami polig, ad de ikir kula Sanhedrin. Maybe he's arguing about the Sanhedrin as well and saying that only if the entire Sanhedrin is present, only then can we, only then, because so he would be arguing on Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon in two things. Number one, they're saying the king and the Kohen Gadol don't have to be present, and he's saying they do. And number two, even Rabbi Yehuda would be saying you need only five members, and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov maybe would be saying you need all 71 of them. So what is it? So Amar Rabbi Yosef Toshma. So Rabbi Yosef says, "I'll bring you a proof from a braisa in Masechta Sanhedrin." Now, the subject of the braisa is the din of Zokin Mamre. The Torah tells us in Parashas Shoftim, right after that pasuk about a Kohen Malavim, that if the national Sanhedrin makes a decision in halacha, and then you have an individual Talmud Chacham, he himself is a distinguished Talmud Chacham, he's capable of deciding and paskening, but he goes against the Beis Din HaGadol and paskens differently from them, then he's Chayav Misa, he's called a Zokin Mamre, a rebellious elder. So now a Braisa deals with some of the details of that. The Braisa says, Motzen Zokin Mamre Abei Pagi. Suppose that the Zokin Mamre found the members of the Sanhedrin in Beit Pagi. So Beit Pagi literally means the part of an animal's head which is encircled by the reins, by the straps that then you use to control it. Because of that, though, that came to be used of any area that's appended to something original. The same way as you have over here, you have the reins around the animal, and part of them are appended, so to speak, around the animal's head. So the same way Beit Pagi came to be used of places that are appended to Yerushalayim. So this is an area within the walls of Yerushalayim, but it's not an original part of the city. It was added in later on, but it's considered like Yerushalayim. It still has the dinim of different Rishonim discuss whether in fact it has the full kedusha of Yerushalayim or not. But whatever the case, it's very close to the Beis Hamikdash. Nevertheless, if the Zokin Mamre finds them over there, and he asks them about a particular din, and later on, and they tell him the din is such and such, v'himra aleihem, and later on he goes and disobeys them and goes and paskens differently. Yochel tehei hamra ose hamra, you would think that that's considered a disobedience of the kind that would make him a zokin mamre. No, tamad lamer v'kamto v'alisa alamokim. Therefore, the pasuk says, in introducing that, it says you should get up and go up to the place melamed shamokim gurdim. That teaches us that the special place where the Sanhedrin is supposed to be, in the Lishkas HaGozis, in the Beis Hamikdash, Gurim is what triggers it, that now a person disobeys them, that he becomes a Zokin Mamre. So in short, in other words, here, even though they're in Beit Pagi, it's right outside the Beis Hamikdash. It's an area appended to Yerushalayim. Nevertheless, though, and in Pashto's the same thing would be anywhere else in Yerushalayim. But anyway, the point is that it's still not considered, he's still not considered a Zokin Mamre, unless when they give him the Psak Din, they're sitting in their office in Lishkas HaGozis. Thus far, the Braisa. So now Rabbi Yosef analyzes. Denofuk Kama. We have to figure out how many of them went out. Elema Denofuk Mektsasan. Do we mean that only some of them went out? And on Beit Pagi, when he asks them for the halacha, well, of course he's not a Zokin Mamre. Maybe the ones who remained inside in Lishkas HaGozis agree with him. And fine, even of course, you know, you could have that a majority of them went out. But still, the Yad Ramah and Sanhedrin explains that you still need all of them together, because what's going on over here? Again, there's a question in halacha that hasn't been resolved until now. They're going and they're asking the national Sanhedrin, and then they're paskening a certain way, and then we say if somebody disobeys them, then he's chayav misa. But you have to have that all of them are together when the question is asked, because otherwise, how do we know? Maybe it's true, fine. Achrid Abin Lahatris, they follow the majority, but maybe if they'd all been sitting together over there, the minority would have convinced the majority of their way of thinking, and they would have paskened differently. So obviously, obviously, if any of them are missing, so then from the Lishkas HaGozis, then you can't call them a Zokin Mamre for that. But still, the Aruch HaNer explains it a little differently, and he says the vote is that still you have to have in any case, even if it turns out that all of them ended up disagreeing with him at different times, that's how it is. Gzeres HaKosev, you have to have all of them in the Lishkas HaGozis. So obviously, so again, if we're saying that he met them in Beis Pagi and they told him the halacha, necessarily it has to be that all of them were there in Beis Pagi. It can't be that some of them were there and some of them were in the Lishkas HaGozis, because then there would be no reason that he'd be a Zuck in Mamre anyhow. So obviously we have to be talking about that all of them went out. Well, Ulamai. Well, now we have to ask, well, why would all of them be outside of there? And we were talking about where all of them would be together. Because again, obviously we're talking about that all 71 of them are in one place. So we can't just be talking about, in other words, that it's already, the day is over and they went home, because then he's not going to find them all together. So are we talking about that they just left for optional reasons? They have other jobs, or they have other things they need to do. Well, mi motzu nafki, would they be even allowed to leave? There always has to be a quorum over there. There always has to be a minimum number during business hours, during the hours when the Sanhedrin is supposed to be open. There always have to be a minimum number of people over there. V'oksib, because the pasuk says in Shir HaShirim, shorerech agan hasahar, your navel is like a round bowl. Al yechser hamozeg, the mozeg, where the mixture of wine should never be lacking. So the round navel refers to the Sanhedrin, because they sat, as the Gemara tells us in a few places, kachatzi gur nagula, they sat in a semicircle so all of them could see each other. So therefore, they're compared in the pasuk to the navel, because the same way Rashi explains on the pasuk, the same way as a baby gets all its nourishment through its navel, the same way we get all our nourishment of Torah through the Sanhedrin. And when it says al yechser hamozeg, the mixture should never be lacking. Now that means, in other words, when you mix wine, the usual proportion that they mixed wine was two parts water to one part wine. So we learn from that, shem nitzrach echad mam lotzis, if one of the members of the Sanhedrin, of the national Sanhedrin of 71 has to leave for any reason, im yesh shem esrim ashloisha, if there are 23 other members over there still going to be present, keneged Sanhedrin Tana, which is the equivalent of a Sanhedrin Tana, and they're going to still be there, yotze, then he's allowed to leave. 23 is about one third of 71. So therefore, as long as you have that one third left, then you can consider it's al yechser hamozeg, the minimum for mixture is still there, one third, and therefore like the one third wine that you would have in the mixture, and therefore that's fine. V'im lav any yotze, and if not, if there are going to be less than 23 there, then he wouldn't be allowed to leave. So we see that Ludvar Harashus, they can't just leave for any reason. There always has to be at least 23 there. Tosfos in Sanhedrin, by the way, brings a different way of learning the Darasha. The word mozeg is gematria 50. Mem zayin gimel equals 50. So it means there can never be 50 members of the Sanhedrin missing, but there can be, because if there are 50 missing out of 71, means there's only 21, but there can be 49 missing, because then you'll have 22, and fine, as we said before, you can never have an even number in Beis Din, so anyway, they're going to have to add a 23rd. So therefore, that would be fine. But anyway, the point is, we see that all the members of the Sanhedrin can't leave at once. El pshita l'dvar mitzvah. So obviously, we have to be talking about that they're leaving for a dvar mitzvah. L'mai. Now we have to ask, what dvar mitzvah would demand all the 71 members of the Sanhedrin to be there? Lav l'medidas egla. Wouldn't it be to measure for the egla arufa for Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov? In that case, then we would say this braisa goes according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, and there would be our answer. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov does require that all 71 members of the Sanhedrin be there for the measuring. But that's Rabbi Yosef's proof. But Omalei Abaya, but Abaya says that's not really a solid proof. Duma la hoisif ala ir ala azoris, because you could equally well say maybe that. That they went out for a different mitzvah, namely to expand the size of the city of Yerushalayim or to expand the size of the Azores. Kiditznan, as in fact we learn in a Mishnah in Shavuos, in Sanhedrin rather, Ein Moisifin al, it's both actually, Ein Moisifin al Ir Val Azores, El Beisin Shoshiv Ve'echad. You can only add, if they want to expand the size of the city of Yerushalayim, and that expanded area should have the dinim of Yerushalayim, as far as eating Kodshim Kalim and the various other things, or they want to expand the size of the Azorah and it should have the dinim of the Azorah, then you have a lot of things. Among the other things, you need Elab Beis Din Shoshim Ve'echad. You need the Beis Din of 71, and that means all 71 of them have to be present. So therefore, you could say they left and they're in base pagi because of that. Doesn't necessarily prove that this braisa is talking about measuring for the egla arufa and following Rav Elazar ben Yaakov. Okay. Nevertheless, even though Abaya said that it's not a solid proof, Tanya Kava said that Rav Yosef, in fact, there exists another braisa which says exactly like Rav Yosef's understanding. Where the Braisa says, Motzana Beis Pagi, that again, if the Zokin found the Sanhedrin in Beis Pagi, the Himra Alehen, and he heard what they say is the Halacha, and then he went and disobeyed them. Now, why would they be in Beis Pagi? The second Braisa spells out, Kigoyin Shiyotzalim Didas Egla. For example, they went out to measure for the Egla Arufa, or they went, like Abaya says, to increase the size of your shalayim or the size of the azara, yochol tehei hamra oseh hamra. You would think then that the zakin mamre's disobedience should be considered a disobedience that makes him a zakin mamre. No, tamad laimer v'kam tevali. So therefore, the pasuk says you should get up and go up. Malamet shamakam gorim. From there, you learn that the actual place of the bais mikdash is what makes the difference. And if you didn't hear the psak from them in the lushkas agazis or wherever it is that they're supposed to be located, then he's not a zakin mamre. So therefore, that does bear out Rabbi Yosef's point that yes, this braisa would be according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, and therefore, yes, the answer is Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov would require all the members of the Sanhedrin to be there to measure for the Egla Arufa. Okay. The halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah, that Rambam paskens like Rabbi Yehuda, that you need five. Next, the Mishnah had said, Nimsa Tomun Bagal, if you find the body buried in a pile of dirt, or hanging on a tree or whatever, then we said the whole din of Egla Arufa doesn't apply. And the Mishnah had said, because the pasuk says, Ki yimotze cholo ba'adama, if you find a dead body in the ground, and we're understanding the word in to mean on, meaning in other words, not buried in the ground. So the Gemara asks, Leima Masnissin, Rabbi Yehuda, Velei Rabbanon. Well, does that mean that our Mishnah, therefore, necessarily would have to go like Rabbi Yehuda and can't go according to the Chachamim? And we would prefer not to do that, of course. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, the Pasuk says about the mitzvah, they have the mitzvah of Shikha, that if you forget grain in your field, you have to leave it for the poor people, grain or any kind of crop, whatever. So the Pasuk says, V'shachachta oimer basada, the Pasuk says, if you forget a bundle of grain in your field, that means, when it says basada, means prapla tomun divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says that comes to exclude a case where the bundle of grain was hidden. That's what Rabbi Yehuda says. V'chamem basada l'rabba says ha-tomun. V'cham say, on the contrary, the word basada comes to include that even if it was buried, and because of that you didn't see it, nevertheless, it's still considered shikha. So if our Mishnah is saying that ba'adama means only on the surface, that would be only according to Rabbi Yehuda. The answer is no. So no, Rab says our Mishnah could go according to the Chachamim as well, because they would say, in each case, the beis, it's true, can have two meanings. The beis can mean in, meaning buried, or it can mean in as in just on the surface. You have to always be able to tell from context. So in our case, dichtiv, ki yimotze cholo, the pasuk starts by saying when a body is found, and without saying anything else, you would say hecha de mishtakach. You would say that it means any place you find it, it's still that still starts the egla arufa process. So then the chachamim are going to say when it continues ba adama, when it continues with the word which on the face of it was unnecessary to say in the ground, then that means prak l'tamun, then it means exclude from that the case where it's buried and stick to only the case where it's on the surface. We would understand then that the base of ba adama means on the surface of the ground. So therefore, that's why the Chachamim say that over here it's that. So therefore, our Mishnah would be saying, and even the Chachamim would agree, that it means not when it's buried. V'hasim in yonei dekra. On the other hand, look at the context of the pasuk over there. Dichtiv kiksik tzok tzircha v'sadecha. The pasuk says when you're harvesting your grain in your field, when you're harvesting your harvest in the field, v'shachachta oimer, and you forget a sheaf of grain. So you would understand from that alone, shikha dumya dekotzer, from that alone, you would understand. First, the pasuk is talking about your harvest, and then it talks about an oimer, which is a bundle of grain. So you'd understand that it means shikha dumya dekotzer. So automatically from that, without saying anything further, you would say that the shikha has to be similar to what you're harvesting. Ma kotzer begolui, when you're harvesting, obviously it's open, because you're not harvesting covered hidden grain. Af shikha begolui, then the word shikha would also mean only what's visible. And therefore, so the kosher rachmana siktuk. Therefore, the kosher rachmana basada the rabbis zatomu. Therefore, the Torah add the word basada, and the Chacham say there you have to understand the bays, meaning even inside. So even it's inside and hidden and buried inside the field. Nevertheless, it would be included because, in other words, in each case, what we're doing is look at what we how we would have understood the pasuk without the word ba'adama or basada, and then you can figure out from that, say the Chachamim, what we're going to do with that word ba'adama or basada. In the case of the dead body by the Egla Arufa, without saying the word ba'adama, automatically you would have figured that it means whether it's visible or whether it's buried in the ground. And therefore, ba'adama tells us specifically when it's visible. And by shikha, the other way around, by default, we would have assumed that it meant only when it's visible. And therefore, the word basada must be teaching us when it's hidden. So the question is, will Rabbi Yehuda nami typically mishikha drumya de kotzer? Well, shouldn't Rabbi Yehuda also learn from that point that shikha is said in connection with kotzer, and therefore the same rule should apply to both, that kotzer is visible, and therefore so is shikha. So therefore it shouldn't apply to what's buried. How do we know otherwise? Why does Rabbi Yehuda say otherwise? The answer to the Gemara says, Eino chanami. You're right, Rabbi Yehuda would learn that way. Ve'ela basoda lomali. So rather, what is Rabbi Yehuda doing with the word basada? He says, you still need the word basada not to tell us that it means things that are buried like the Chachamim say. Rather, it includes also that you should realize also that shikha can apply even when it's still attached to the ground, even when it's still standing grain. Like this, you would understand without the word basada, you would understand if you harvested the grain, you cut it from the ground, and then you made a bundle of it, and then you forgot that bundle, then it's shikha. Or if you dropped a couple of individual stalks or whatever, how would we know, let's say you have an entire section of your field that you forgot to harvest, how do we know that that's also considered shikha? That we would know from the word basada, says Rabbi Yehuda. Therefore, I don't have the word basada to teach us about tamun. Well, v'rabbanon shikhas kamam nalaru, well, where do the Chachamim learn that din from? The answer is nafkalahu mikisiktuk tzircha b'sadecha. They learn it from the fact that it says, and Hagoyis Habach also adds the words b'shachachta. So they learn because it says b'sadecha b'shachachta. In other words, if you look at the trup on the pasuk, the word b'sadecha has a separating trup. So it's one clause of the pasuk. Kisiktzik tzircha b'sadecha. Period. Not period. Comma. Whatever. B'shachachta oimem asada, and you forget a sheaf in the field. Nevertheless, the Chachamim are saying because it says b'sadecha and then b'shachachta, we can also darshan as though those two words go together. So it means even you forgot part of your field and didn't harvest it, then it's also considered shikha. So what does Rabbi Yehuda answer to that? He says, he uses the fact that you could read the pasuk like that, b'sadecha v'shachachta, he uses it to teach us what Rabbi Bohu says. The words b'sadecha v'shachachta teach us to exclude the case where his bundles of grain flew into the other guy's field. So a wind came and picked up bundles that were in his field and brought them into the next guy over his field. And he didn't realize that they were his, so he forgot them over there. So now the pasuk is telling you with the word besadecha, b'shachachta, that's not considered shikha because it's not because you forgot it, because it's not in your field. You forgot it because you didn't realize it belonged to you. So Rabbi Yehuda is using the word besadecha v'shachachta to teach us that din. Therefore, he doesn't have it available to teach us the din of standing grain that you forgot it. It would be considered shikha. He has to learn it from the word besadecha, and therefore he doesn't have it available to learn about tamun. What if he did know that it was his and he still left it over there? The Rambam says it doesn't matter. Either way, it would still be considered his. According to Rashi's Lashon over here, it's mashma only if Hitaka didn't realize that it was his, but if he knew that it was his and still left it there, then it would be considered shit. So whatever, there's discussion about that. Anyway, so v'rabbanon, what are the Chachamim answer to that? They say, they say, because the pasuk could have said, in the field, and it said, besodecha, in your field. Therefore, we can doubt in that din about if they flew into somebody else's property and you forgot it over there. So therefore, we can learn it from that, and therefore we don't need b'sodecha b'shachachta to teach us that. Therefore, we have it available to teach us. Therefore, we have b'sodecha b'shachachta to teach us about shikas kama, and in turn, then therefore we have the word b'sodecha in that same pasuk to teach us about tamun, to teach us that tamun is included. Rabbi Yehuda again, Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold that the word b'sodecha b'sodecha is significant, that we should daushin from it. Usually, yes, Rabbi Yehuda will daushin a langacha if we have the top of the amud where he daushin zikne versus zikenecha. But here he doesn't find it to be compelling to say that the chaf of the sadecha should teach us anything extra. Okay. So since we're talking about that point about bundles of grain flying into the other guy's field, so now the Gemara digresses a bit to talk about the dinim with that. So, and then eventually we're going to relate back this question actually to the Egla Arufa. So what happens if his bundles of grain were blown around in his field, but they landed, instead of landing back on the ground, they landed on top of something else, on top of another bundle, or on top of a stone or a pillar or another bundle or whatever, would the din of shikha still apply to them? Mahu, the question is, Rabbi Yemi is asking, Avir Sadek is Sadadami, are things that are in the airspace of the field considered that they're in the field, so therefore Shikha would apply to them, Olavka Sadadami, or maybe not, maybe the whole concept of Shikha applies only when it's actually on the ground. So Amalet of Kahana Lit of Papi, Va Amulet of Kahana Lit of Zvid, Tifshit Loy Mindababahu, Amr of Elazar. Shouldn't you be able to answer Rabbi Yumiya's question based on what Rabbi Bohu said in the name of Rabbi Lozer, that we just said a few lines earlier, where he said that the Torah with the words besadecha v'shachachta, or with besade or besadecha, where it could have said besade, teaches us that where the grain flew into the other guy's field. Then it's not considered shikha, implying the chavera ein l'sech sedei olay, implying only if it flew into the other guy's field, not if it flew into his own field. So it sounds like if, as long as it's in his own field, then it's still chayev and shikha, even though it's on top of something else. So the Gemara says back, why? According to your svara that you're bringing up that idea, why would you say that when it's in somebody else's field, he's potter only if it's floating? Literally, sofu means floating. So only if it's above the ground, only if it landed on something, not if it landed on the ground. The fact is, Torah is saying b'sadecha, it has to be in your field. And it's not, because it's not in your field. It's in the other guy's field. So evidently, we have to understand Rabbi Bohu's case is talking about they fell into somebody else's field, and even munachin, even if they're lying flat on the ground, nevertheless, they're not shikha. The only reason he uses the word safu, which implies that they're somewhere above ground, is l'mashkachas, l'alabit safu, because how else is it going to get there in the first place unless it was picked up from the ground in his field? But it doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be above ground in the other guy's field. So by the same token, maybe not necessarily, doesn't it? Maybe even in his field itself, once it was picked up, and it landed on top of something else, maybe it's not shikha anymore. Or maybe, but maybe not. Maybe it's still considered in the field. So Toshma, the Gemara says, let's try to bring another proof. A Mishnah says in Peah, if the farmer took hold of a certain bundle of grain and he intended to bring it to the city, at this point, Rashi explains, the Gemara is assuming that it doesn't davka mean that he picked it up intending to bring it to the city. Usually, when a person picks up a bundle of the grain, that's what his purpose for it is. But it would mean, l'chora, if he picked it up for any reason, then he put down that bundle on top of a different bundle, and then he forgot it. Then only the bottom one would be considered shikha, but not the top one. Reb Shimon Yehuda Omi, Mishum Reb Shimon, Shneim Enim Shikha. And Reb Shimon Yehuda disagrees and says in the name of Reb Shimon, neither one is Shikha. Hatachten Mepneshu Tomun, the bottom one because it's Tomun, and he agrees with Reb Yehuda before, who says that Tomun is not considered Shikha. Ve'oyen Mepneshu itself, and the top one wouldn't be because it's not on the ground, it's above the ground, it's on top of something else. Now let's consider.
So let's consider. So ad kan le pligi el batachton. Now the machlokas between of Shimon ben Yehuda and the Chachamim seems to be only as far as the bottom one. Do we say that the bottom one is potter from shikha because it's tamun or not? Avo ba elyon debehakol le havo is shikha. It sounds like the top one. Everybody would agree is not shikha. So therefore, so we see now. So in other words, we would see that they both agree that anytime it's soft, anytime it's not lying flat on the ground, then it's not shikha. Well, there you go. That's why it's potter from shikha, because not on the ground. It's on top of a different one. The one answer is no. Shiny hosim, no, because it's different over there. Kiven to achzik bay zoch bay. Because once he took a hold of it, it doesn't even need to be that he took hold of it to bring it to the city. Once he was zoicha in it, then it's not, then he was zoicha in it. In other words, the whole concept of shikha only applies, Rashi explains, it has to be shokhuach me'ikroi, where to begin with he forgot it, not that he ever made a kinyan on it and then forgot it. So here, once he picked it up, he made a kinyan on it. So then therefore shikha doesn't apply anymore because of that. Well, the Gemara asks, well, then why does the Mishnah bother mentioning the case where he put it on top of a different one? Wouldn't the same thing apply based on that logic, even if you put it back down on the ground in the field? You're right. The reason it mentions the case where he put it on top of a different one is because it wants to present the machloikas about what happens with the bottom one. So the Gemara says, "V'ham ifneishu it's soft karmar." So what do you mean, though? The Mishnah is saying that Shimon and Yehuda is saying that the top one is potter because it's soft, because it's floating above the ground. The answer is "Aim ifneishu kitzof." You could say it doesn't mean literally that it's above that it's potter because it's above the ground. It's similar to, in other words, as if it was still above ground in his hand, and therefore he's still zoicha in it. So not necessarily is the Mishnah taking a stand one way or the other on if it's not in his hand anymore, but it's on top of something else. Is it potter or not? Maybe, maybe not. In the end though, the Rambam does paskin like Rabbi Lekar Avohu, that in fact, if it is on top of as long as it's in his field, it can be considered shikha even if it's on top of something else. So now the Gemara is going to continue and relate this back to the matter of Egla Aruf. One day when Abaya was feeling that his mind was particularly clear, he says, Omar Abaya, Hareini ki ben Azay b'shukei Tveria. I am now like Ben Azay in the marketplace of Tveria. Ben Azay, we know, is very, very sharp. And anytime anybody asked him anything in Kola Torah Kula, he could answer. So now Rabbi is saying that today I feel like that. I feel like I'm ready to meet any challenge in Torah that people come. So Omele Ahumid Rabbon and Abaya. So one of the Chachamim came and asked Abaya, Shnei Chalolim Zeh Agabe Zeh. Returning to our case of Egla Arufa, suppose you find two bodies, one on top of the other. Now, one of them is a little bit, they're a little bit offset one from the other. So one of them is on top of the other. The second one is on top of the first one, but it's a little bit turned in a different direction, let's say. So therefore, so the top one is slightly closer to one city and the bottom one is slightly closer to a different city. So meheichan humoided, from which one do we measure? Do we say there are a lot of possibilities? Do we say min b'minei habitamon? Would we say that because they're both the same type of thing, they're both bodies, therefore the bottom one would be considered tamun, it would be considered hidden, and as we said in the Mishnah, you don't do an egla rufa for a hidden one, so therefore we ignore that one as far as egla rufa. And therefore we measure only from the top body, or maybe we would say that even the top one is considered soft because not lying on the ground, and conversely maybe we would say that it's not considered tamun unless it's buried, like the Mishnah had said, in dirt or rocks or whatever, not if it's under another body, therefore we should measure from the bottom one. Maybe it's considered tamun and soft, v'loimi tachtin moided, v'loimi elyon moided, and then he wouldn't measure from either one, and there would be no egla arufa at all. And for that matter, Rashi says you could ask that. Maybe the bottom one is not tamun and the top one is not soft, and therefore you would have to measure from both of them, and maybe conceivably two different cities would have to bring an egla arufa. But the Gemara didn't mention that point because it's included in all the other ones so far. So what are the possible? So what's the din? Omalei, sort of Abaya answers this Chacham Tinisua. We can learn it from the Mishnah, from the Braisa that we quoted before. We just said, if you grabbed a hold of a bundle of grain intending to bring it to the city, and he put it on top of a different bundle of grain, and then he forgot it, only the bottom one is shikha, because the chachamim don't hold that there's an exemption of tamun. The top one is not shikha. Because it's soft, because it's above the ground. Reb Shimon Yehuda Omer, Reb Shimon Shneim Enim Shikha, and Reb Shimon Yehuda says the name of Reb Shimon, like we said before, neither one is Shikha. Hatachnim Mepneshu Tzamun, Mepneshu Tamun, Ve'oyim Mepneshu Tzav. The bottom one is considered Tamun, and he agrees with Reb Yehuda that therefore it's Potter. And the top one is Potter because it's soft, because not on the ground, because not Besodecha anymore. So Savruha, now the Chachamim from the Beis Medrash, who were trying to understand Rabbi's answer, they thought Dehani Tanoi could have Yehuda Svirulahu, that both the Tanoim in this last Braisa that we just quoted both agree with Rabbi Yehuda Da'ama Basoda Praplatamun, where he says that the word Basoda means not something that's Tamun, not something that's hidden. Well, if we understand it that way, my lab bahokamifli. So what would be the underlying reason behind their machalikas? The mouse of a min bamina have a tamun or mouse of a have a tamun. So we would say that because here it's min bamina, it's one bundle of grain on top of another bundle of grain, so they're both the same min. So one Tana would hold that min bamina have a tamun. So the Tanakama would hold that Reb Shimon Yehuda would hold that even the bottom one is considered tamun. Omar Savalai have a tamun, whereas the Tanakama would hold it's not tamun. So therefore he would say that this bottom one is still shikha, because even though he agrees with Reb Yehuda's underlying idea that tamun is potter from shikha, here he wouldn't call it tamun because the fact is it's only buried under another bundle of the same kind. That Tanakama would say, when does Reb Yehuda say that tamun is potter? Only if you have only if it's buried underneath something else, not the same min. So if we understand it that way, then that would be the answer to, and then that would be the answer to the question that was posed to Abaya. You have the two mason, one on top of the other. We would say that the Tanakama, and the halacha would be like the Tanakama of the pashtus, would be that the bottom one is not considered tamun. Therefore, we would have to go according to the, at least we'd have to go according to the bottom one. So the question is, no, he could have Yehuda Sviruhu, the Kulama min mina have a tamun. No, not necessarily. You could say if they both agree with Rabbi Yehuda, they might both agree that because min b'minoi, it's still considered tamun. We don't care about the fact that it's still the same min. Nevertheless, tamun still applies. We could say more simply that the Braisa has the same, is repeating the same argument of Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. So the Chachamim over here in this last Braisa agree with the Chachamim against Rabbi Yehuda that there's no exemption for Tamun anyway. Rabbi Shimon Yehuda would hold like Rabbi Yehuda that there's an exemption for Tamun. So in that case, then, not necessarily is the Braisa taking a stand one way or the other on min b'minoi, on whether it's buried, when it's buried under the same min, whether at least according to the Chachamim, whether that's considered Tamun. Because the Chachamim would be saying that there's no exemption for Tamun anyway. Well, the question is, in that case, then why bother mentioning the case where you put one bundle on top of the other? I feel the offer with Suronami. Wouldn't the same thing, wouldn't you have the same machloikas also if the bundle was buried in dirt or in pebbles? Because after all, if we're saying that the machloikas is just whether tamun is an exemption or not, then should just say that in that case also, the Chacham hold that it's not potter, and Rav Shimon Yehuda holds it is. The answer is Einachanami. You're right. However, the Braisa wanted to highlight how far Rabbi Yehuda goes. Dama Philip min b'mino have a tamun, where he says that even min b'mino is enough for it to be considered tamun. So therefore, that's why the Braisa would tell about that case where it's under another bundle. But in fact, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon Yehuda would say the same thing, even if it was buried in dirt. So from that Braisa, there's not really necessarily a proof. The Rambam ends up paskening like the possibility that Me'elyon Moedid. We measure only from the top one. We do consider the bottom one to be Tamun, and therefore we ignore that as far as Egla Rufa, and we measure only from the top body. Okay. Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa. Now this we learned in the Mishnah. Cholol v'loy chonuk. When it says cholol, when a dead body, and the word cholol specifically means somebody who was killed by a metal weapon. So therefore it means v'loy chonuk. So therefore it comes to exclude the case where the person is found strangled. Cholol also means v'loy mefarfer, where he's not still moving around. In other words, he has to be actually completely dead, not just that they found him on the verge of death. So there's some discussion what happens afterwards. If he does die, does that mean after all we do the Egla Arufa? The Meiri says that they would, but then the Minchas Chinuch says that not. As long as they found him, as long as they found him still alive, then they would never bring the Egla Arufa, even though he died afterwards. Anyway, Ba'adama, we said, V'loy Tomun Bagal. The word Ba'adama means not if it's buried in a heap of dirt or rocks or whatever. Neufel, when it says falling in the Pasuk, means V'loy Toli Be'ilan, not if he's hanging on a tree. Basoda, and the word Basoda in the field means V'loy Tsof Apneamayim, not if he's floating on the surface of the water. Rabbi Lozo says, I agree as far as cholol, that it has to be specifically that, but as far as the others, no, but kulanim hoya cholol orphan. In all of those cases, as long as the person was cholol, was killed by a sword or some other metal weapon, then orphan, then you would do the egla rufa. In other words, he says, the fact that we're learning from ba'adoma and basada and so on and so forth, those, he says, are not essential. The essential thing is that it has to be a cholol. So Tanya, Omer Rabbi Yosef ben Bar Yehuda, Omer Loi L'Rabbi Lazar. So they asked Rabbi Lazar, how could you say that? Don't you agree that if a guy was found strangled and lying on a garbage heap, that so even though he's not soft and he's not tomun and so forth, she'en ofrin, we don't do the egla arufa, because after all, the guy is strangled and not killed with a weapon. So then, Alma cholol v'lechonuk. So you agree also that cholol means specifically that and not killed in any other way. Hachanami ba'adama v'lechomun bagal nof v'lechol v'ilun v'sodu v'lechsof hapneim agabi mayim. So why are you saying by the other ones that it's not exact? And even though he's found buried in dirt or hanging on a tree or floating on the water, nevertheless, you still would do egla arufa. What's the difference? So Rabbi Lazar, cholol yaseiroksiv. The answer is Rabbi Lazar would say, sure, but it says an extra time in the pasuk cholol, so that it says more times, it says several times. So from one of those, we can learn that it excludes chonuk. So in other words, he's saying because it repeats the word cholol, therefore we learn that that one is particular. It has to be cholol, but all the other ones, it only says once ba'adama, once basada, once neufel. So therefore he says that means it's not essential, and it doesn't dafka have to be that way. The halacha is not like that. The halacha is like the Tana in our Mishnah, that in those cases, there's no egla arufa. Rosham Shinofal Hirsch gives the point that in those cases, at least you see that the person had a certain fear. He's trying to cover up what he did. Or in the case where the person was found in the fire, obviously he just ran away before he had the chance to finish the job. So it shows at least he has a certain fear of the authorities. And therefore, when you do egla arufa, only when the guy is like blazing it out, like I'm going to leave a dead body over here and you guys can't do anything about it. So therefore, that was so in all those cases, Tomun and Toli Be'ilan and so forth, and that would be different. Okay, we said in the mission, Nimsa Samoch L'Sfar, if you find the body near the border of Eretz Yisrael, Ola Ir Sheruba Ovdik Chavim Cholo, where you find it near a city that's majority Goyim, then you don't do Egla Arufa. Dichtiv Ki Yimotze, Prapa Motze, because the pasuk says Ki Yimotze, if you find, implying not motzui, not something where it's more common for this kind of thing to happen, and near the border of the Goyish nations, or near a city with Goyim in it, then it's more likely that one of them killed them, and it's more motzui, it's more common for there to be bodies found over there, and therefore there's no egla arufa. We said, Oyla ir she'en ba'beistin, if you find the body near a city where there's no beistin, then we said you don't measure. Deba'inan, zikne ir v'leka, because you have to have zikne ha'ir, and you don't have, so therefore you're not going to be able to do it. So therefore you ignore that city. And we said, ein moedin ela le'ir chola, you measure only to a city that has a beistin. So the Gemara says, pshita, isn't that last part obvious? Kivin de tonel le'ir she'en ba'beistin, once it says that the nearby city does not have a basin, then you don't measure to it. I know your dina dane moded in a then the nearby city that doesn't have a basin, it says doesn't bring an egla arufa. So automatically then we know I know your dina dane moded in el yeshua basin, that you measure only to the city that has the basin. So what's the point of mentioning that last line? The answer is exactly that. That's exactly what the Mishnah wants to tell us. The reason behind it. to the Tanya, not the reason, but in other words, you would have misunderstood the Mishnah to be saying that if the newest city doesn't have a Beis Din, then there's no Eglah Arufa at all. But in fact, the Mishnah wants to tell us, it doesn't mean there's no Eglah Arufa, just means that city that doesn't have a Beis Din doesn't bring the Eglah Arufa to the Tanya, as in fact we learn in a Braisa. Minayin Shem Nimsa Somoch Le'ir Shem Beis Din. How do we know that if you find the body near a city that doesn't have a Beis Din, Shemanichin Oisa, we ignore that city, Umoydin Le'ir Sheyeshba Beis Din, and we measure only to the newest city that has a Beis Din? Tamad Lemes, Velok Vazikneo Irahi, Mikol Mokim. Therefore, the Pasuk says the Zkanim of that city should take, and that means regardless, even if it's not actually the closest city, but it's the closest city that has a Beis Din. Rashi explains, in other words, that because it didn't have to say the word ho'ir, it could have just said the zakenim of that city should take the calf. So therefore, we learn from that it means ho'ir. The extra word ho'ir means even if it's not the closest city, but it's the closest city that has a Beis Din, then they're the ones who do it. Mishnah says, "Nimtza mechuvan ben shtei ayoris." What happens if you find the body exactly between two cities? Then shtei mevius, shtei eglos, divrei Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says that in that case, each city has to bring its own egla arufa. Now, actually, there's Gemara in Bechoris that mentions that you only have Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. The Gemara in Bechoris brings a couple of brises with different chachamim who argue with Rabbi Eliezer. One opinion says that in that case, there is no Egla Arufa. And the other one says that the two cities jointly bring an Egla Arufa and they make a Tanai, whichever of these cities is actually the closer one, then the Egla Arufa should be that city's. We're going to see in the Gemara, because you have the question of these measurements, when you come out with the exact same measurement in either direction, can we say that in fact it really is exact? So we'll deal with that in the Gemara. Continues the mission of En Yerushalayim via Egla Arufa. The city of Yerushalayim does not bring an Eglah Arufa, even if you found a body near it, for reasons that we're going to see in the Gemara. Next, Nimtza Rosh B'Makom Echad B'Gufa B'Makom Acher. If you find the head of the body, if you find the head of the dead person in one place and the body in a different place, Melichin Harosh Eitzal Aguf Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. Then Rabbi Eliezer says you bring the head to the body. Rabbi Akiva says you bring the body to where the head is. We'll see in the Gemara what the purpose of that is. Next, may ayin ho you moided in. From what part of the body did they measure? Rabbi Eliezer says they would measure from his navel. Rabbi Akiva says from his nose. And Rabbi Lezman Yaakov says, look, since we said before that he has to be a cholol, he has to be a person who was killed by the sword, where does a person become a cholol when he's killed by a sword? When his head is chopped off. So therefore you measure from his neck, mitzavarai. As we'll see in the Gemara, that he learns from a pasuk that the word cholol specifically refers to somebody who was killed by a blow to the neck. So the Gemara says, my time at the Rabbi Eliezer, why does Rabbi Eliezer hold that each city brings its own Eglah Arufa in this case, where it's exactly in the middle? Because Rabbi Eliezer holds, first of all, it is possible to be precise. In other words, when we have, they measured and they found in each direction, it's exactly the same measurement. We don't say, well, it means that their measuring instruments are not 100% accurate and really one of them is actually slightly closer and we just don't know it. No, we could actually say that is a real valid measurement. It really did come out that it is exact to the millimeter in both directions. So therefore, and he holds a kroiva after the kroivos. He says also when the pasuk says the nearest city doesn't mean only the single nearest city, can even be the two nearest cities. Therefore, he says that both of them would have to bring an Eglah Arufa. The different opinions in the Braises, in the Sefer Bechoras, disagree on one or the other of those points. If we say, and the Gemara brings this concept in a number of other places in Shas, if you say if you say it's impossible to be precise with the measurements, really, in other words, one measurement really must have been slightly longer than the other, our measuring instruments are not accurate enough to be able to tell, then we would say the fact is both of them are not the closest city, only one of them is. So therefore we would say that only one of them, only one of them needs to bring an Eglah Arufa. And in that case, then they would bring one jointly. They'd pool their money jointly and bring an Eglah Arufa and make a Tanai. The people of each city would say, if we're the closer city, then it should belong to us. And if not, then it should belong to you. Or if we say that Dafka Kroiva, not Kroivois, then we would say that you only ever the closest city brings, not the closest cities in plural. And then that opinion would say there's no Eglah Arufa in this case. But Rabbi Eliezer disagrees with both of those points, which is why he says there's two Eglah Arufas. Next, we said, Be'en Yerushalayim via Eglah Arufa, the city of Yerushalayim never brings one, because the Pasuk says that if you find the body in the land that Hashem gave you to inherit, V'kasavar, so the Tana of our Mishnah holds, Yerushalayim, and it's Chalkul Shvatim, the city of Yerushalayim was not divided up to, among the Shvatim, it's the joint property of the entire Jewish people, therefore it's not called Lerishta. Then we said in the Mishnah, Nimsa Rosh of a Makam Chula, we said if the head was found in one place and the body in a different place, then we have Machloikas, Rabbi Eliezer, and Rabbi Akiva, which one you bring to which one. So B'mai Kamifli, so what are they arguing regarding what? What's the Nafkin Minna, which part we bring to which one? Elema L'inin Medida Kamifli, are you going to say that they're arguing as far as measurement? So in other words, here you have further on in the Mishnah, they're arguing whether you measure from the navel or the nose or whatever. So therefore, it's important to know where the body actually fell to begin with, to measure from there. Nope. Since the sefer begins that, almost as a new machloikas, from where do you measure? That implies that the first machloikas in the Mishnah is not talking about as far as the measuring. There's something else. So Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, the mes mitzvah konim akoyim akomifim. The machloikas in the earlier part of the Mishnah is, as far as we know, there's the din mes mitzvah konim akoyim. If you find a mes mitzvah, you have a mes where you don't have anybody available, any of his relatives to bury him, then the din is konim akoyim. He acquires the place where he fell and you bury him right there. There are dinim in that. It depends whether it's in Jewish territory and there's different dinim in it. But basically, you have that idea that you bury him where he's found. So the Mishnah is saying, look, kovrei, forget about Eglah Arufa for a minute. You have to bury the guy. So the Mishnah is telling us, first of all, that by implication that he's kona where he fell, and therefore you have to bury him there. The Mishnah is not explicitly saying that din, because we know that from other places in Chas. So now if we find the head in one place and the body in another place, so then you have the machlokas Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva, which part you bring to which part. But it's not relevant as far as the measuring for the Eglah Arufa, it's relevant as far as where you bury the guy. Well, but my commitment, well, what's the underlying machlokas? Rabbi Eliezer, who says that you bring the head to the body, he holds the body must have fallen right where the guy died. Resha did not even nafil. How does the head come out to be someplace else? The head rolled afterwards. The head rolled away. So therefore, the makoimai of the smetz mitzvah is where you find the body. Or Marisava, whereas Rabbi Akiva holds Reisha Heikel the Nafil. On the contrary, the head fell where the guy was actually killed. Gufo, who did right was, but the body still continued to move, because let's say we assume the guy was killed while he was walking, let's say. So the body ended up moving a little bit, ended up moving a little further along, like convulsing and whatever, and moving a little further along. So therefore, he says that basically where you find the head is where the guy actually died. And there is a Yerushalmi that says that actually if it's on a down slope, then even Rabbi Akiva would agree that probably the head, the body is where it landed, and then you find the head further down the slope, let's say, then yeah, you would say that you would say that you have to bring the body to where the, you have to bring the head to where the body is. Next, we said in the Mishnah, Me'ayin Hoyimoydin, from what part of the body did they measure to find the nearest city? And we had three different opinions. So B'mai Kamifli, so what's the underlying argument? Mar Saba Ika Chayusa Ba'ape, Rabbi Akiva, who holds that you measure from his nose, holds that the main chayus of a person is in his nose when he's breathing. Whereas Rabbi Eliezer holds that the main chayus of a person is from his navel. A person eats and drinks, and that sustains his body. So that's considered the main place of his chayus. So the Gemara says, Lema kihadi tanoi. Should we say then that Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva are arguing in the same machloikas as the following tanoim? Mehechan avlad noitzer. From what part of a baby's body does it start being formed in the womb? First the head is formed, and then the rest of the body. As we find the pasuk, we find David HaMelech says to Hashem, from the womb of my mother, you are goizi. Now, in context, the Mefarshim on the pasuk explained that goizi means literally you pulled me out. But the Gemara is darshining over here, the word gozi means my head. As we find a pasuk, cut off your hair and throw it away, in other words, as a sign of mourning. So we see that the word goz is associated with the head. So therefore, gozi would mean that David is saying to Hashem, you created my head and then the rest of me in my mother's womb. So therefore, so that would show that that first the head forms. Abashol, I'm a tiburai, and Abashol says the baby is first formed from its navel, and then it sends out roots in all directions, and the rest of the body is formed from that. So therefore, we would say Rabbi Eliezer, who holds that you measure from the navel, would hold like Abashol, and Rabbi Akiva, who holds that you measure from the nose, would go like the Tanakh. But the Gemara says no. After the Tema Abashol, no, you could even say that Rabbi Akiva agrees with Abashol, because Abashol is talking about only as far as the formation of the baby, that the baby is formed beginning from the middle, says Abashol. But when it comes to the life of a person, everybody would agree, even Abashol, that the primary life of a person is in his nose, in his breathing. As we find by the marble, every creature that had the breath of life in its nostrils died. So we see that the main thing is the breath of life in the nostrils. And this is Negea in other areas of Halacha as well. You have in Yuma, talks about a case where a building collapsed and you're digging out survivors from the rubble on Shabbos or on Yom Kippur. If you find a person and they're not breathing, then you don't continue unburying them on Shabbos or on Yom Kippur or whatever, because at that point they're dead. But if you find that they're still breathing, then you still are mechal Shabbos or whatever to save them. So we see that the breathing is the main thing. Okay, the last thing in the Mishnah, we said Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, I'm makom shenasa cholo mitzavorei, that we measure from the place where the person becomes a cholo, namely from his nech. My time is Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Why does Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov say that? It's a nevuah of Yechezkel against the country of Ammon. He says that you're going to be placed together with the necks of the corpses of the Rishoyim. So we see the word cholol, corpse, is associated with neck. Therefore, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says that there you have a point that therefore a person is called cholol when a person is there, fine, he'll agree that even if the person was killed by a metal weapon, even if it wasn't specifically at the neck, you still do the eglad rufa, but at least the word cholol is most associated with the neck, and therefore he says that that's where you would measure from. Okay.
Yes, Shekayah.